Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, episode 135 for January 13th, 2010. Back up a five. Net at Night is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/night. And by GoToMyPC, remote access software that's built for folks who aren't technical. And it comes with free customer service 24/7.
For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com/night.
And by the new voice-activated sync, featuring hands-free calling, music and podcast search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRide.com.
It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California, in the U.S. of A. I'm Leo Laporte.
And from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I'm Amber MacArthur.
Hello, Amber MacArthur!
Hello, Leo. You know, Leo, I'm a little disappointed because I was watching you during CES, and you always had very colorful shirts on, but today you're back to the basics.
Well, I used up all the colorful shirts. I did. I wore
tie-dye.
Did you see the tie? You know, okay, here's what happened. Day one at CES, we land at 3:30 or 4, and at 5 o'clock we have to go. I mean, literally, 5 o'clock we have to go interview the biggest interview of the whole show, which is the CEO of Ford.
Yeah.
So I figure, I just have time to get to the room, check in, and change. And I figure I'm interviewing the CEO of Ford. I put on a blazer, a necktie, club tie, blue shirt, slacks. I go, and the guy, and I love him, by the way. He's really a great character, Alan Mulally. Is wearing like a Pat Boone zipper turtleneck.
I saw that interview.
and he even gives me a hard time. He says, what's with the tie? I said, dude, you're a CEO of, you have 100,000 employees. I thought I should dress for the occasion. Yeah. So the next day I figured, well, I'm not doing that again. So we were going to the digital experience. And that's a big party. So I have a tie-dye shirt that actually Abby gave me for Christmas.
Ooh,
I looked like wavy gravy.
I never thought that I would tune into your coverage to see what you were wearing, but it was all over the place.
And a little too much gravy for wavy. It was all over the place. It was a lot of fun. We had a great time. I wish you were there. Maybe next time you could come down.
Yeah, I know. I was jealous. It looked like it was a blast. So now that you guys have worked out all the kinks of the coverage, hopefully I'll get down next year.
Oh, we have. We never work out the kinks. So we figured out how to do it this way. But you know me, by next year, I'll have a whole other thing I want to do.
Oh, definitely. You'll just come up with a whole new way of doing it.
You know, one of the things we saw, which was really cool, is the Red Scarlet. You know the red camera?
Yeah, I think you took a picture of that.
I did.
Right?
I did. I didn't say what it was. But Red camera is a 4K, double high resolution video camera that's going to sell for a very low cost. And the whole world is excited about this and waiting for this. It came out. Alex Lindsay and everybody's bought them, and it shoots super high 4K resolution. But now they've created a new thing, which is called the Scarlet, which is even lower cost and lets you shoot 3K. So it's even better than high res, 16:9. This amazing sensor, this Mysterium X sensor that gives you all this resolution. And it's kind of a box that's interchangeable. So it's perfect for us because we don't have to buy more than we need. We'll just buy the sensor and the lens. We don't need to buy any recording system or anything because we just hook it up to our switcher, right?
Oh, so you are going to get it. I thought you were just joking on that.
No, well, here's what's been going on is that Colleen's been saying, well, let's not invest. We want to go high def, but let's not invest in cameras yet. We're at an inflection point. Everything's about to change. Let's put it off as long as we can. And, the economics of TWiT have kind of dictated that anyway. We're not going to do a new studio till maybe June or July. And so they're about $3,000. We were looking at $6,000 Cine Cam Alta EX1s, which are great cameras. These are less and higher resolution and more flexible.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see when the time comes, but I'm thinking that's where we're going to go.
So you're doing something new to the studio, or are you just
That's my point. We're not done. We're never done. Whatever we did this year won't be the same next year. It will still be working out the bugs forever. Because I don't know why. I'm restless, I guess. we want to move the studio out from the little room that you saw to the bigger room outside and put a lighting rig. And we'll have more room for guests, for visitors. When you come down, we can set you up with a desk and you could do a show from the day. You know, you'll see. It's going to be great.
Wow, you crazy. Never stop, Leo.
Never
stop.
You
make me tired just talking about it.
Rust never sleeps, as Neil Young used to say. Your countryman.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. You know a lot of Canadiana, you know that.
I do. I do. And I saw a lot of people from Canada were visiting. I tell you, I saw a lot of fans. I was surprised because I thought this is, you know, not open to the public, and a lot of fans were there on the show floor. I have to say, I don't want to say this too loud. Because I practically killed my staff, and they came home and they were exhausted and sick and tired. Their feet were aching. I had a blast.
I wasn't
tired at all. It was the most fun. But don't tell them.
I won't tell anyone.
I don't want
your
them,
secret's good with me.
I don't want them. Me. Yeah, because I don't want them to like go. Oh, you know, he killed us. But because Tony and Eric didn't sleep like for 4 days.
Were they editing? Because I saw pictures of them editing.
Middle of the night.
I love that they did those updates. Those
wasn't
great.
That great on the Posterous blog? I'll tell you, once again, Posterous has proven to be a great tool for this kind of thing. I set up a Posterous community blog that they all could post to. And you can go see it. It's a great document of what happened. Twitlive.posterous.com. And they all could email from their phones or their computers and post pictures and whatever. And so we got 7 pages worth of stuff. You know, this is the limo ride on the way home. There's Dane fast asleep on the stage. So this is great behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, it was done really well. Because I think a lot of times people want to do behind-the-scenes and they don't do it that well. But I think this was a good example of how it can be done well and be successful. Because I followed that. It was so interesting just to see the equipment that you were using down there.
Right.
All the behind-the-scenes photos. I really enjoyed that part
of it. I had a blast. Yeah, Posterous really was. More and more I'm recommending people not necessarily use Posterous as their main blog, but use it as a pipeline to their to their other stuff. It really works well.
Makes sense.
I set it up on my new Nexus One phone so that I can easily take pictures and videos.
I know, and I heard you like the phone. I heard you talking to Dick about it.
I love it. I don't know if it's when it's going to be available in Canada. But
well, it'll probably be a while.
Really?
Well, you remember the iPhone, how much later it was available here than in the US.
But that's what's the beauty of this, is it's not controlled. In fact, you could buy it now unlocked. Who's the GSM provider up there?
Well, the big one
Rogers,
would be
right?
Rogers, yeah.
What you should do is find out, does it work on Rogers frequencies? I bet our chat room could tell us. And if it does, you just put a SIM chip in here because it's unlocked. It's $529 unlocked, but it's unlocked.
I bet you it would. Yeah, I would assume.
It's thin. It's light. It's powerful. Telus and Bell also do GSM, they said now. So you could.
That's right. They just made that change.
So, it doesn't work on 3G, Rogers 3G. That's too bad. That's the same thing at AT&T here. Yeah. That's too bad.
So you like it better than the iPhone?
It's very close. It might be better than the iPhone. I'm going to use it instead of the iPhone for the next few weeks. I'll tell you. I would say yes.
Yes.
I would say.
But what about apps, Leo?
Well, it doesn't have nearly the variety of apps, but it does have background apps. So, for instance, I have the chat room running right now on the phone, and I can use it. And it runs in the background, so I can do something else and come back to the chat room. It has Evernote, has Foursquare, has a lot of the apps that I use. You know what the big one that's missing? The only one that really kills me is Audible. We've got to get Google to do it. And I understand that the first half of 2010, they said they're going to do it. It's not Audible. I asked Audible about this, and they said, you know, we're on hundreds of devices. We cannot develop for individual devices. We don't have the resources and the manpower. So what we do is we work together with Apple or whoever.
Yeah.
Look how long it took Microsoft to put it on the Zune. And it drove Audible crazy. They said, we kept talking to him. Finally, they put in a developer on it. It doesn't take very long. And they were able to get it working on the Zune. So it's, you know, I'm sure they provided all the tools, all the help that they can provide to Google, but Google's got to write it. Or somebody, maybe not Google, but somebody's got to write it. Probably Google, though, because of the DRM, you're going to want a big company doing it.
Yeah.
But boy, as soon as they, I'll tell you what, as soon as they get Audible on this, that's it. I'm done.
That's all you need.
That's
wow.
all I need. Yeah. Everything else is great on here. And it's got stuff like Turn by Turn for free in here on the Google Maps. When you pull up to the place, Google Maps pulls up Street View and says, this is where you're headed, right? And there's a picture of it. Things like that that just are mind-boggling.
Well, maybe I'll bypass getting... I never got an iPhone, as you know.
Skip it.
You sent me an unlocked one.
I gave
one,
you an unlocked one like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
What'd you do with it?
I still have it, actually.
Do you use it like an iPod?
Yeah, pretty much. That's all I use it for. I mean, I still use my BlackBerry all the time, but I've had major BlackBerry trouble over the past few months. So I'm kind of in the market for a new phone, I think, later this year.
Doesn't have a hardware keyboard, but that's what makes it so thin and light. I don't miss it.
No.
I like the on-screen keyboard, but I'm conditioned to that from the cell phone. So I'm sorry, we got off track. Who's our guest today?
Oh, okay. So we have a guest, and this was Dane's recommendation. It's we have Robert May from Backupify.
Oh, I'm a customer.
Yeah, very cool service where you can back up all your online accounts. So he is one of the founders of that company, and he's going to join us to talk a little bit about what they do and what they offer. And also, I've read online that they have a pretty good deal that they have available for the next couple of weeks. So hopefully we can chat about that as well.
Yeah, a very good deal. In fact, I'm really glad to tell people about this because now's the time. You have till the end of the month to try this out. So before you have to start paying. So yes, we'll talk. I am using this. I give it an A+.
Oh, good.
So we'll talk about Backupify in a bit. And also, some good news, one of your heroes is going to be on Net at Night in a couple of weeks.
Oh, my goodness, Leo. I know.
You can thank me for that.
I can't believe it. So just for everybody who's listening in, Dane emailed me today and he said, hey, we were talking and Leo just gave me Jacob Nielsen's new book and he said you were a fan and we should get him on the show. And I said, well, I would love to have him on the show. So Dane emailed him and literally within, I think it was 2 or 3 hours, he wrote me back and said that Jacob Nielsen, who is the usability guru, will be joining us on the show in 2 weeks.
I'm so excited. I just love this guy.
I'm very excited. I know. You know, I carried around his book like my Bible for the good part of almost five years in terms of working on sites and designing for good usability. And I can't wait to talk to him.
If you're in industrial design, website design, any user interface discipline of any kind, you must listen. It's just going to be fantastic. That'll be a couple of weeks from now. We're going to get to your links of the week. And I guess our guest of the week will talk up about Backify in just a little bit. But before we do that, I want to talk about my friends at Citrix, the makers of GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC is built for non-technical folks. It's so easy to use. If you've been hearing me talk about remote access, I'm sure by now you realize it's something that'd be cool to have. Perhaps you've been put off by the notion that it's going to need an expert to do it. You're going to have to get the IT department involved. But no, GoToMyPC, designed by Citrix, they do the high-end stuff, is designed by Citrix for normal folks. Anyone can use it so simply, whether you're in the couch in your living room, in a hotel in New York, at an internet cafe in Paris, which is where I wish I were right now. You log on to GoToMyPC. Your office desktop appears instantly. You can use any program, work on any file, check email, access network resources. Easy, 24/7 customer support, and you can try it free right now. GoToMyPC.com/night. GoToMyPC.com/NIGHT. 30 days free to give you an idea of what you can do with it. Before your next trip, install GoToMyPC on your office computer. You won't get swamped by emails. I wish I'd done that before I left for Vegas. I wouldn't have 1,000 emails in my inbox. It's secure, too. A great way to surf from an internet cafe where you're not so sure about what's going on with the wireless. You'll get a 128-bit encrypted connection back to your computer at work, and you can surf from there. Try it free. GoToMyPC.com/night. You're going to love it, and we thank them so much for their support of Net at Night. All right, Amber, we've got some links. You know,
I
mention this big news story that just broke about an hour ago?
Oh, definitely, because I was looking on Twitter just before we started talking, and I did see some mentions of it, so we should chat about
that. Huge. This is maybe the biggest story on the internet. It will evolve into, I think, the biggest story of 2010. from Google, a new approach to China. This is in the official Google blog, and it is a shocker. Came out today at 3 o'clock Pacific time in the afternoon. I'll read some of it to you because I think it's very dramatic when you read it. Like many other well-known organizations, this is Google writing, we face cyber attacks of varying degrees on a regular basis. In mid-December, we detected a highly sophisticated and targeted attack on our corporate infrastructure originating from China that resulted in the theft of intellectual property from Google. However, it soon became clear that what at first appeared to be solely a security incident, albeit a significant one, was something quite different. First, this attack was not just on Google. As part of our investigation, we have discovered that at least 20 other large companies from a wide range of businesses, including the internet, finance, technology, media, and chemical sectors, have been similarly targeted. We are currently in the process of notifying those companies, and we're also working with the relevant U.S. authorities. Second, we have evidence to suggest that a primary goal of the attackers was accessing the Gmail accounts of Chinese human rights activists. Based on our investigation to date, we believe their attack did not achieve that objective. Only two Gmail accounts appear to have been accessed, and that activity was limited to account information such as the date the account was created and subject line rather than the content of the emails themselves. Third, as part of this investigation, but independent of the attack on Google, we've discovered that the accounts of dozens of U.S., China, and Europe-based Gmail users who are advocates of human rights in China appear to have been routinely accessed by third parties. Wow. These accounts have not been accessed through any security breach at Google, but most likely via phishing scams or malware placed on the users' computers. We've taken the unusual step of sharing information about these attacks with a broad audience, not just because of the security and human rights implications of what we've unearthed, but because this information goes to the heart of a much bigger global debate about freedom of speech. We launched Google.cn, the Chinese version of Google, in January 2006 in the belief that the benefits of increased access to information for people in China and a more wide-open internet outweighed our discomfort in agreeing to censor some results. You remember, we were tough on Google, and a lot of folks were tough on Google for doing that. At the time, we made clear that we will carefully monitor conditions in China, including new laws and other restrictions on our services. If we determine that we are unable to achieve the objectives outlined, we will not hesitate to reconsider our approach to China. These attacks and the surveillance they have uncovered, combined with the attempts over the past year to further limit free speech on the web, have led us to conclude we should review the feasibility of our business operations in China. And here is the payoff sentence. We have decided we are no longer willing to continue censoring our results on Google.cn. And so over the next few weeks, we will be discussing with the Chinese government the basis on which we could operate an unfiltered search engine within the law, if at all. We recognize this may well mean having to shut down Google.cn and potentially our offices in China. I just want to applaud Google.
Wow.
That is the right thing to do. That's the thing they should have done in the first place. But now that they have done it, I just want to applaud them. If this country continues its human rights violations, you either don't do business in the country or you do an open business in the country, and that's the choice.
It's so refreshing to see a company actually stand up for something like that, because so often it all gets glossed over and they never actually make any type of really firm decision on something.
You know how you get human rights in China? You, as American companies, you say, we won't do business unless you have human rights. We're not going to allow you access to the internet. And when there's a sufficient price to pay, sure, they've got, there's Chinese search engines. And, of course, they're, co-opted and restricted and censored. But I think not having access to Google is a significant blow to China. And I have to think that if they want to play in the world community, this is going to be something they're going to think very seriously about. Google could single-handedly here have launched, begun the road to true freedom in China. And I think this is huge.
Wow, that is huge.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yep. So I'm really excited about that, and I understand why they're angry and why they felt like they had to do this. It's like, hey, we tried to work with you guys, and now you try to break in and steal stuff. Google's saying, screw you, China, and I think it's about time. Isn't that great? So that's, I think, the biggest story of the week in the internet.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be a pretty big trending topic if it's not already on Twitter.
Yeah, huge news.
Yeah, massive news. Well, Leo, it will probably kick this trending topic off of the list, but...
this is a big one, too. I know what you're going to talk about. It was all, you know what? We're at CES. It's all anybody's talking about. It was like buzz, buzz, buzz. Did you hear about Conan?
I know.
It was huge.
My thing is, I don't even care. I mean, I find myself what happens when there are trending topics and stuff happening on the internet and people are blogging about it. I mean, I don't really care about Conan O'Brien all that much. But then all of a sudden, I'm starting to care because there's so much buzz about it and so much talk about it.
Right.
So I just read this interesting little post on Mashable.com where they say that in the headline, Conan wins the hearts and minds of the internet.
Yeah.
Because there are people online who are coming forward and supporting him. He released a statement earlier today where he had said that he wasn't going to accept the time change and stay on if they were to go forward with those plans and push his show back. And a very sincere letter. I don't know
if he took it to the net. No, I haven't. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful letter. I mean, it was very honest. And having worked in the television business, and I know you have over the years, you realize that there are a lot of dishonest people in that business who are you know, they don't necessarily always have your best interests in mind. And I think, you know, he talked about how for the past, I think it was 9 years or something, he had really focused on wanting to do the show. He had spent so many hundreds and hundreds of hours just thinking about doing the show, tried to pour everything into it, and he realized how quickly they were just ready to pull the mat out from underneath him. And it was just a very honest, authentic correspondence that he wrote to his fans and released to the media.
You know what's great is that Mashable, which wrote this article that you linked to, did assessment of the tweets. I don't know if NBC pays attention to tweets. I bet they might. They used a service called Crimson Hexagon. 26% of the tweets respect for Conan. 24% poor Conan. 22% love Conan, not Leno. 16% NBC sucks. And only 12% don't like Conan. That's pretty. 88% supportive of Conan.
That's amazing.
Is the Twitter, this will be a measure of how important the Twitterverse is.
I know. It really, you know, I don't know if Conan O'Brien is on Twitter. I was kind of poking around a little bit, but didn't find anything. However,
I'm pretty sure he is. Wait,
he must.
Question.
I would think he would be. His letter is hilarious, though. I think it starts with something like Hello Earth or something
to the
along
people of
line.
Hello to the people of Earth.
To the people of Earth. But then he gets it. I mean, it's just so genuine. And I recommend that people read it. It's posted on the New York Times, among other places on the web.
You know, he makes between $10 and $20 million a year. This is not an insignificant thing to pass up. He does also have a clause in his contract that says if he never gets to host The Tonight Show, NBC has to pay him $45 million.
You know, I think what makes me think this story is so interesting is that we've come into a day and age where if someone like Conan, you know, he's so popular, so successful, and if a network is trying to potentially sort of screw with his future, there really is power and momentum that can build online and kind of a force behind it. I don't know if it will actually change anything, like you said, but it's fun to watch all these things unravel.
Well, we've seen this happen, you know, in a small way with things like Firefly, Joss Whedon's show, and I think they made the movie because of internet response. But this is, the Twitter power hasn't really been felt yet. This might be the time that it starts to people start to notice. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that one. So,
I mean, this was the problem with Conan, of course, is that he appeals to people like us and hipsters on Twitter, but doesn't appeal to middle America. He's not the Johnny Carson type. But but don't people like us hate Leno?
Oh my gosh, Leo. Okay, here's the thing is that I don't watch a lot of television, but I love The Daily Show and I love The Colbert Report. But the thing is, it's on a little bit late. It's between 11 and 12. So oftentimes I don't feel like staying up that late and watching it. And so I thought when Jay Leno came on at 10, I'd never watched him before. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to start watching that show because I love it. I don't like a lot of dramatic series. So the late night talk show is definitely more my type of program. And I can't even watch him.
Yeah.
He's
not edgy.
Awful.
He's not edgy like, well, if you've been brought up on Colbert and Stewart, forget it. But, you know, people like me are Letterman fans from day one. That's why we love Conan.
Yeah, he's great.
I love Craig Ferguson. I think his edge and style is fantastic. I like that down market approach. And there is nobody better than Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. I mean, this is comedy. And I have to say, I'm sure there's a cutoff point. I don't know if it's 35 or 40 or 25 or whatever, but I would guess anybody under 35, if you did a poll between Leno and Jon Stewart, it's going to be 90% Jon Stewart, right?
Oh, definitely.
And I think NBC is making a huge mistake going backwards in time.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. But anyway, it'll be a story to watch over the next few days, that's for sure. And Leo, I don't know if we want to do another ad first, but I have some really news about Typeface and Al Gore.
Now, there's a pair I wouldn't really expect to see in the news together. Al Gore, is he a font nerd?
He's a font nerd, Leo.
No.
This is one of the best stories. When I read this, you're probably the only person that I could really share this with. So I don't know if it has a place in the other shows that I do. But Al Gore is coming out with a sequel to an Inconvenient Truth. And the book is called Our Choice. And he is working with a company in New York and in terms of designing the book. And he had chosen, I think it's Brioni, as one of the typefaces.
Brioni,
for the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brioni.
It's a beautiful typeface.
Yeah, beautiful typeface. So that was what they had chosen. But it turns out that he didn't like the way one of the numeral one was created or designed.
You're kidding.
In that typeface. Yes. So he ended up working with his people to put a call into.
He's right, by the way. He's absolutely right. The one in the old Brioni is a capital I.
Exactly. Yeah. So he thought that it would be a little confusing for its readers when they would see that character. So he decided to get in touch with the design team. Actually, the design team's in Brooklyn, New York, and request that they possibly change that particular character. And so they were all very excited to get a call, obviously, from his office. And they decided to go and create something new, which they sent back to Al Gore and his team. And so they changed the numeral one to do something that was more in line with what Gore liked. And they got the big thumbs up.
You got to read the blog post on Typotech, the company that does Brioni. It's so funny.
It's really funny because they explain step by step all of the emails that go back and forth. And at the end of it, they say that we'll call this Gore's Choice.
I love it. You know what? I think he's actually right. Could it
be?
He
is right.
Yeah.
I think the designers agreed that he was right, that he had a really good point.
And they call it Gore's Choice. Isn't that great? All right. I know there are a lot of people out there who, for some reason, have just decided to vilify Al Gore, but that's impressive.
That is pretty impressive.
That's attention to detail. I like it. And he was right.
Yeah, he was definitely right. So, and I guess if you had downloaded that typeface in the past, they have updated it. So that will be a permanent feature of the new typeface.
You know, I got offered $2,000 just before I left for CES. I did.
I'm like, you might want to finish that sentence.
I got offered $2,000 by Sony for one tweet.
Really?
And I didn't see the email, which is good because it took the decision out of my hands. But that's a lot of money for one tweet. We're going to talk about that story in just a second. But before we do, I didn't do it, folks. Before we do, I want to mention Sync. They were there in at CES in force. Sync is a great product. It's in Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. It's the voice-activated Sync. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, because I was very interested. When I did my research, he was at Boeing for something like 35 years, designed the first digital cockpits, the 767. He did everything from the 727 to the 787 and did the first digital cockpits. And I thought, you know, this might really explain a lot about why Sync is designed the way it is. The point of Sync, you know, it of course, is Bluetooth calling, but it also allows you to do things like control your iPod, your iPhone, your Nano, your Zune, your Droid. It even works with the Nexus One. Play music off of it. You get information. You get weather reports. You can get vehicle health reports. It's the kind of thing a jet fighter pilot or a commercial jet airliner might have built into it, because you keep your hands on the wheels. You're still paying attention to what you're doing. You don't look off the eyes are on the road. You don't look. And it's funny, by the way, because I've been saying this in the ads. you keep your hands on the wheel and the eyes on the road. And I saw it in all of the Ford stuff. So I think they're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. And I asked him about that. And he said, yeah, exactly. He said, you don't want to distract a pilot. You give them the information they need and no more. They're very busy. And frankly, we ought to be paying attention more to the road. But yet we want all these features. That's where Sync comes in. You could do it all with your voice. It's voice activated. Great voice recognition. And you can say, turn the temperature up. You could tell it what temperature to make the climate, the cabin. You could tell it what song to play by name. They won 3 big awards at CES, including Best of Innovations in the In-Vehicle Accessories category, Official Car of CES for 10 innovative features in the new Taurus. They were honored in the CES Design and Engineering Awards for their Sync. Ford owned CES because they did such a great job with this. And I want you to check out Sync. You can do it two ways. Go to, I got the typo in there, SyncMyRide.com. Oh, that's the website for Sync owners. And that's where I go, you know, get updates and find out what my vehicle health statuses and stuff like that. But you also, there's some great videos there. You can watch how Sync works. Or, you know what? The best thing to do, either rent a Ford vehicle with Sync in it and get the new one, get the 2010, or go to your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer and say, I want to test drive the Sync. They'll be glad to let you sit in the car and play with it. It's awesome. SyncMyRide.com. So I got to find this Sony email that I got.
Yeah, you do. Just on the Ford topic, though, it's interesting because I've been hearing so much about them because the auto show is also happening.
Oh, yeah. They announced the Focus yesterday. Yeah, mm-hmm. The new Focus, the global car. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all over the place. I'm trying to get someone on Ford to come on Web Nation because I do the show now on Wednesday nights live on CP24. So I'm trying to get someone to come in and talk about some of these new features because they're getting a ton of press all over the place. So hopefully that will pan out.
I got to find this offer. So I know nobody's going to believe me, but it came in January 6th, and that, you know, I didn't read my email at CES, but it basically said, if you would be willing to tweet, and I'll tell you what it asked me to say. It said, if you'd be willing to tweet, be the first to own a new Sony bloggy camera.
Yeah.
It said, retweet this. It just said, retweet this. Retweet for a chance to win hashtag Sony CES. It had a link, and then it had the word ad after it. And they said, you will tweet this once and only once, and we will give you $2,000.
Amazing.
I was going to do it. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
What would you have done? I'm so glad it was the decision was taken out of my hands.
I don't know, Leo. It's hard to say.
That's a lot of money for a tweet.
It is, but I don't know. Maybe I still feel like Twitter is kind of sacred in some ways. That it's one thing for me to promote my own work, but I don't know if I'd want to be putting paid tweets out there.
Yeah. I mean, it was very clearly a paid tweet, right? So it wasn't, it was an ad. So it wasn't like you would be trying to put something over on anybody.
I think the big thing, as long as it's overly clear that it is an ad, you know, I know they put ad in brackets there, but maybe there's some other way to treat it so it's it appears a little bit differently than your other tweets. Because this is going to be something that is going to be a bigger topic of conversation in 2010. I read this article on sfgate.com where other people like LeVar Burton was approached by Sony, and he did send out a tweet with that exact same sentence that you just read.
I wonder how much they offered him. He has millions of followers. I only have 150,000.
I read somewhere that I think some people have been offered up to $10,000.
Oh, that's so hard to turn down.
I know.
$2,000 for one tweet on January 9th.
Yeah, it's pretty good word count, Leo.
That is good work if you can get it. So what would you have done? I am so glad that I saw this after it was too late because it took it out of my hands. But what would you have done?
I don't know. See, here's the thing is that I don't want to say I would never do it because maybe 6 months or 12 months down
the
road.
I've said I would never do it.
Norm, right?
Now I'm wondering.
So I'm afraid to say that. Exactly. So what I would say right now is I think right now I probably wouldn't do it. But I wouldn't want to jeopardize the relationship that I have with my followers. And I don't know if they expect straight up ads from me right now. So,
well, you know that I would have probably lost. It would have cost me 10, 20, 30,000 followers, I would expect. Some huge number would have abandoned me.
Probably. But, you know, maybe there's
I hardly use Twitter that much anymore.
I know. There might be a time down the road, though, I think, where it just becomes the norm. I think people probably thought this about blogging. You know, if you had an ad in your blog when blogs first came out, people thought, no, this is sacred territory. We can't do that. Whereas if you saw an ad on a blog right now, you wouldn't think too much of it, right? So sometimes I think these things need time, and I think it's early, early for the sponsored tweet.
Okay. So I dodged a bullet there.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
It's not like I have to. I mean, well, I could use the money.
Well, you know, it'd be cool, Leo, if you did it and you donated the money or something. That might be kind of a neat thing to do.
No, I want the money.
Okay. I was trying to give you an opening there, but no,
I didn't
anyway.
Do it. I didn't do it. Well, the reason is I signed up for Adly. That's how I got it. Because I was investigating. This is one of the, there's several services that do this, and Adly was one of them. And I just thought, well, I'll sign up. And I set my price really, really high, like outrageously high, figuring nobody would ever offer me any money. Higher than that, by the way. I'm gonna tweet. Should I have accepted? So Sony and Adly, I'm gonna give people a chance. Offered me $2,000 for one ad tweet last week. I didn't do it.
I think Chris Perillo has done it.
Oh, Chris does it every 5 tweets. Yeah. So I'm going to ask people what they think. I mean, it's a lot of money.
I know. It is a lot of money.
It's easy to say. It's easy for somebody to say, oh, you shouldn't do it. But put yourself in my shoes. What if somebody came up to you and said, one tweet, $2,000. Would you do it?
I guess, too, it probably depends on the product as well, right?
The Bloggy camera is badly named, but actually was kind of a neat little webcam. Let's get our guest on. What do you say?
All right, let's do it.
Get me off the hook here. Actually, this is a product I am not paid to endorse. See, I like the idea that you know what the ads are, and then everything else I do is because I love it. Isn't that the better way to do it?
That is the better
way. There's no question, you know, about, for instance, when I get Backupify on and we talk
to them.
Hey,
Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Robert?
Good.
Let's go to
full screen. You can call me Rob.
Rob, let me go to full screen.
Hi, Rob.
Here. Rob is the CEO and founder of Backupify. And I think it's really important for me as a journalist that when you hear me say, I love Backupify, it's not like there's $1,000 under the table. You know that I support it. Rob, how'd you get the idea for Backupify?
So actually, it was a guy named Charlie O'Donnell. He works for First Round Capital now. And, I was up in New York in November 2008, and Charlie and I met up to just chat, and he was trying to back up his Flickr account. So he said, hey, I think people would pay for this, and so we started building it. It kind of took a life of its own.
Well, it's exactly the problem we see with cloud computing, which is, yeah, it's great. You've got all your data. It's out in the cloud, but you kind of lose control of it when you do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. One of the things that we've seen from our users is that people aren't so worried that, for instance, Google is just going to lose, you know, their Gmail account. Mm-hmm. It's more about data liberation. We've seen a lot of your third-party independent data people. We've seen a lot of businesses who want to have control over their data, and they don't want to leave it all locked up there.
So I'm just going to ask this question right off the top, because I'm sure people are wondering this. How do they know that all that information is safe up on Backupify? Because there are so many new services that come online every few months. So what can you say to make them feel secure?
Well, so it's one of the reasons that we give people the opportunity to use their own S3 account. So, you know, we're all on
That's what I do, Amazon. By the way.
Yeah, so we're all on Amazon Web Services, and we realize that some people may say, well, hey, I'm not going to trust all my data to a startup. So if you want to get your own Amazon S3 account, you just pay directly for their storage, and we'll back it all up there. So then if anything ever happens, you know, there are ways for you to get it out.
Well, also, I mean, if you've got a backup of original data, now you've got two copies. And even if Backupify dies, you know, you'd have to have both Google Docs and Backupify die at the same time, or Facebook and Flickr and Backupify die at the same time. So that seems unlikely.
And we're working on new features that make it easy to do things like zip up your weekly backups and download them to your PC push them to a, you know, sort of a third-party sync service. So we've got some interesting features coming around there.
So what services do you back up?
Gosh, you put me on the spot. I don't even know the whole list.
It's a long list.
I'm looking at some of them right now.
So we're at 19, but they haven't all been released yet. Some of them are still going through QA. But I know I can tell you our most popular are Twitter, Flickr, Google Docs, Gmail.
Now, does Gmail work? Because the last time I checked, you were not backing up Gmail.
You know, it does. So the problem we had with Gmail was when we really started getting a lot of signups, we signed up about 1,000 people a day. And when we first sort of got to that level, we're suddenly pulling all this data out of Gmail. It triggered their intrusion detection algorithms.
Oh, of course.
The users were getting...
The people said, oh, you're hitting Gmail. You're getting too much to download. So good. I'm going to add Google. I've got Flickr backed up, Twitter, Delicious, Zoho Office, Google Docs, and WordPress backing up right now. Facebook, right. Friend Feed. Those are in beta, but I've got them working, and I'm going to add Gmail to that. That's pretty much my whole online presence. In what form, though, does this back up? I mean, if I back up Twitter, is it just a bunch of text? What am I going to get? Can I restore it?
It depends on the service. So for something like a Flickr account, we can do a pretty good job of restore. We haven't automated that yet, but it's something that we'll be doing soon. For Twitter, we really can't because I can't timestamp a tweet. So if you tweeted something from 3 weeks ago, the best I can do is push it back out to Twitter now.
Right.
And as far as formats go, what we typically do is we keep things initially in the format that the service sends us, which is some type of XML, JPEGs for photos. But for some things like Twitter, we put them in other formats. So like we create a nice PDF book of all your tweets that you can download, stuff like that.
What about cost for backing everything up?
Well, the good thing is it's free right now. And the reason that we did that, and when I say if it's free, it doesn't mean if you sign up, it'll be free. And then at some point in the future, we charge you. The existing level of service will always be free. That's
really?
Our intention.
Wow.
And the reason we decided to do that was we charged out of the gate and we signed up a lot of people and there were a lot of people paying for the service. But we realized that that the long-term goal was to sign up a lot more people. And by going free, we got a lot of good press out of it that was cheaper than what it would have cost us to market and acquire those customers.
Right.
You know, the storage cost for those customers was cheaper. So it made sense for us. And it also gave us a lot of good ideas about architecture. I mean, we went from having, 2,000 users to having 40,000 users. that's a lot of, we're at 17, 18 EC2 servers now.
Wow.
So it's a lot of stuff to back up.
I love the idea of backing up all my Flickr photos, because what if Flickr cancels my service? It's not so much I think Flickr is going to go out of business, but they have been known in the past to just bump people off and kill their service for violating their terms of service, and all that stuff would be lost.
Sure, and keep in mind, Leo, like one-third of data loss is user error, so that's not going to change
right.
Whatever kind of platform that you use, that people sometimes accidentally delete their data. And don't just think of it as Twitter and Flickr and social media sites. I mean, we want to move into some of the more mission critical business sites like take care of the move from QuickBooks to QuickBooks Online, for example.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Right.
So how do you guys afford to back all this stuff up for free?
Well, so we're funded. I mean, I'm out here in California right now, in San Francisco, and we're out here fundraising, and I can tell you that. We're going to come back with funds. That's something I can tell you for sure.
I'm not surprised. This is a brilliant idea. There's a lot of online backup services out there, but this is unique because it backs up my data from the cloud.
Right, and so we don't actually do PC hard drives right now, I would never say never, but we don't intend at this time to ever go into that business.
It's different. Because, it's a different business.
Yeah, I mean, all your data is moving to the cloud. And, we actually, I don't know if you were at, you were at CES because I saw you talking. Intel had an announcement about their netbook application store that they launched. And we were one of the first apps in that store because the use cases of netbooks match the things that we back up. People on netbooks, they tend to tweet.
Right.
They tend to use Gmail and Google Docs and those things.
Right. That makes sense. You know, if you're using a netbook, you're using the cloud, backing it all up is very important because you don't have much storage on your netbook anyway.
Exactly.
I just think, now, what form is it? It's backed up as XML files? Is that the case?
It's backed up as XML files, and what we're working on is a different format to let you view each type of service. So it kind of depends, right? Because the data that's coming from Facebook, like right now your Facebook data is kind of ugly. It's all lumped in one big file. It's your status updates and your links and notes. And
yeah,
all
but
that
at least
stuff.
I have all those pictures and stuff saved somewhere. I mean, it's worth it for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's free, right? So
I can't complain.
Exactly. Yeah, it's free until January 31st.
Now, am I being stupid? Because I'm using my S3 storage and paying for it. I should probably just use your S3 storage.
I'm sure. No, we don't mind. You know, a surprisingly high percentage of our users, I would say 15 to 20% use their own S3 account.
S3 is cheap, and it's the point you made originally, and in response to Amber, was at least, you know, now it's basically on my server. I control it.
Mm. Right.
So I have it.
Is it pretty easy to back things up? I mean, if I wanted to go in and back up all my Gmail and Twitter, how long, you know, I guess it depends on how much data there is, obviously.
Technically speaking, it's not always that easy. I can tell you we've had
for you it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But for the user it's pretty straightforward. You know, we try to use whatever authentication methods the services support so that we don't have to save your usernames and passwords. But in a couple of cases we do have to store those.
That was a question when we talked about this on This Week in Google. People wanted to know, what about Twitter? Do I have to give them my Twitter information? And Twitter supports OAuth. So you use OAuth. But not everybody does OAuth.
Right. And then there are some problems like I'll give you an example with Basecamp, right? The Basecamp API does not support file downloads. So we store your username and password, and we actually have a parser that logs in and pulls your files for you so you can get those backed up.
Right. So here I am. I'm authorizing my Facebook account, and you enter in your address. But this is with Facebook, not with Backupify.
Right. That's taking place on Facebook servers.
So that's their OAuth. Of course, you have to enter your password correctly. And then you have access to your, and now the data, how much, what would you say is the average amount of data people are saving? This could start to add up quite a bit, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's not as much as you think. Our average user probably uses less than 250 megs.
Really?
We have a long tail of users, about 10% of our users that use more than a gig, but some of those people use a lot more than a gig. So the record so far is 261 gigs.
Is it by somebody named Leo LaPorte? Anybody?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't.
But I do. I back up my Flickr, which is really nice to know. All my Google Docs are backed up. My WordPress blog is backed up. You have a little plugin for WordPress that you install, and then it backs up the blog. This is such a... And by the way, it looks like it... Correct me if I'm wrong. It's not only backing up the posts, but also the templates, the settings, all of that stuff.
Yeah, all the files and everything. Now, if you use a third-party commenting service like Disqust, then you know we can't pull that right now.
Right.
But what don't we back up, Leo, that you'd like us to add?
SmugMug.
Oh, you might not want to say this.
Well, actually, though, SmugMug does support S3 for its storage, so I can, in a way, I can use S3 Vault on SmugMug, and that gives me extra storage. You're adding YouTube, which would really be nice. You know, our good friend Mr. Excel, Amber.
Yes, I know, Leo.
He got his YouTube account canceled for no apparent reason. Google just said, oh, you violated terms of service. Now, this is a guy who's been offering free Excel tips, tens of thousands a year for 5 years. All of those videos wiped off of YouTube.
And he can't get them back.
He can't get them back. Google's unresponsive. So this is a case where YouTube backup would have been great. I see you're going to support Xmark, which is great. Tumblr.
Yep.
I like Posterous, which is my blogging platform we were talking about earlier. I'd love to see you do Posterous. That's a great Tumblr-like blogging platform.
Yeah, a lot of requests for that.
So yeah, yeah.
It's on the list.
So, I guess this is a fairly, I want to say, easy thing to do. If somebody supports OAuth and has kind of a regular data format, and I guess probably some people make it a lot harder to do if they don't do either of those.
Yeah, so it varies a lot. Some of these services have private APIs that you can get access to through business development relationships, but the public can't use. And some partners we haven't done this yet, but we're talking to some of these people about integrating more closely with them, sort of using our own API.
Right.
So, I mean, this is the way that things are going, right? We have this massive shift of data to the cloud, and you're going to have an entirely new ecosystem. And everything that currently exists in the PC ecosystem is going to have to be replicated in the cloud eventually.
Yeah. I truly adore this service. It was something that needed to come along to make cloud computing make sense. You know, it's the one thing Amber Dvorak always says, yeah, but what about your data? Now, this is not, we should make the... Pretty good impression, huh? This is one thing we should make clear. Backupify is not running on your computer. You set it up and your servers do all the work. So it doesn't slow your computer down at all. It's kind of server to server backup. It never goes through your system.
Exactly.
I think this is great. I mean, hopefully we can educate more people about this, because I know just from friends and family who are posting their lives up on Facebook and other and YouTube videos, family photos, and they're not thinking about backing any of it up. And it would be a shame for so many people to lose all of that content.
Yeah.
I have videos of my 2-year-old daughter. It was one of the things that originally interested me in the idea when Charlie suggested it. So,
yeah, you don't want to lose those. They're too valuable. That's a great idea. And free through January 31st. That means when you sign up now, it's free forever?
Right. After that, we're going to move to a freemium model. And so the level of service that you'll get for free after that point will not be the same as what you get right now.
So, folks, if you're listening, I hope you're listening before January 31st. Run, don't walk, to backupify.com and take advantage of this free offer.
Yeah, I've heard you can crash people's servers, Leo, so I'm interested to see how we do.
This is a good test. You're running on EC3, right?
Yeah, EC2.
EC2. I don't think we'll crash your server. If we can crash Amazon, we're way too powerful. This is really neat. And you can invite your friends. You can right now. I'm going to add the Gmail now. I'm glad you re-added that. You worked that out with Google, so that's great.
Yeah, and I would encourage you guys, you know, follow at Backupify on Twitter and tweet if you have questions or send us email. You know, we love to hear from our users. And if you like the service, please, you know, tweet about it or blog about it or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just think this is so great.
This is great. Thank you so much for joining us, Robert. And I'm going to sign up and get my family signed up soon.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for calling. Take care. Rob May, who is with Backupify. Go to backupify.com, BACKUPIFY.com. And through January 31st, it's free to sign up. This is not an advertisement. This is why I don't do ad tweets, because I want people to know. I mean, we talk about stuff because we like it. We do take ads, but I think they're very clear when they're ads. And they're also products we like. They're not just random ads. So you want to know what the tweeters thought about my decision not to run
that ad? Yes. What's the word?
I mean, it's kind of it's a mixed bag. And more people thought I should do it than I thought would say
really?
I should do it. Yeah. Dead Pirate says, personal-ish Twitter. You could do that with a Twitter account, just like a show, but not on your own Twitter. Some people said you just did it by posting what you did. Well, all I mentioned was Sony wanted me to do it. I didn't say what they were advertising. I didn't give you a link. So, no, they didn't get a free ad that way. S. Clemens says, well, if it was clearly labeled an ad and not an editorial comment, I think you should have done it. Eyelids says, take the money. Survive. You think you had no value to add? Joel Raskin says, yes, provided you included a paid tweet disclaimer or similar. All it says at the end is parenthesis, ad parenthesis. Reg Meisel says, not happy with tweet for pay. Recommendations become tainted. Money good, but integrity shot. I kind of feel that way myself. Spence Mencillas says, yes, you fool. So it really, there's a really interesting, it's all over the map. 3x10 to 8 MPS says, with great power comes great responsibility. The slippery slope is a Twitter game changer and not worth any amount of money in my opinion. I think he's right. My inclination is not to do it.
Yeah.
And it is not an ad for me to ask the question. I don't see how that's an ad. It's just mentioning the word Sony. And believe me, I ain't getting paid for it.
Yeah. No kidding. Maybe they'll come back at you now, Leo, and offer you $10,000 and the saga will continue.
You know, I hope they don't, because $10,000 would be very hard to turn down. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot.
So that's how much some people make it, you know, in 3 months. For one tweet.
Like 6 months.
Yeah. That's crazy money.
Yeah.
What is the, and that's another question. What is the point at which you can't, what is your number? Is there a, it's the old joke. A guy comes up to a woman and says, I'll give you $1,000 for one night. And she says, $1,000? I would never do it for so little. What do you take me for? He says, well, you've just established what you are. We're just haggling over price. So, you know, if you'll take it for $10,000, you're just as much of a as you would if you do it for $2,000, right? The amount of money isn't relevant. I don't know. That's a great question, isn't it? I will continue to monitor the tweets. And I'm going to do what my conscience says, not what the tweets say. That's the paper tweet.
All right, so our last link. Are you ready for that, Leo?
Before we do that, we should do, speaking of commercials, we should do one more commercial if you don't mind.
I was like,
And this is the argument a lot of people give, is that, well, you do ads. how is this different? But I think we're very clear. This is an ad. And it doesn't. There's something about a stream of tweets that somehow it interrupts that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've had this discussion for a long time with a lot of people, and I really don't know. We're very careful. We're very selective about who we advertise for. We only do one ad every half hour, and we turn down ads all the time from companies I don't want to do ads for. So if I do an ad for instance, Audible.com, it's because I've been using them since 2001, and I can really get behind them, and I believe in it. And frankly, it works better for Audible that way. So I don't know. Audible.com is a great, it's a great service. I would recommend this anyway. In fact, I did recommend it long before they started advertising. They've been with us for a couple of years now. They were the company that helped pay for our trip to CES, so I thank them for that, along with Citrix and Ford. And it's a great service. I like plugging Audible.com because I think our listeners get great value. Audible is a bookstore with now more than 70,000 books, all kinds of books that you can listen to. Look, we're all busy. No one has time to read anymore, but there are things you should be reading. And that's what's so great about Audible.com, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, poetry or science fiction, whatever you're interested in. Even if you just want to go to a movie and you'd like to read the book before you see the movie, Audible.com is a great site for that. If you go to audible.com/night right now, you can sign up for the gold account. That's one book a month, and your first one's free. Here's the link to Books to Film. The Lovely Bones just came out. That is a great book, by the way.
Yeah, highly recommend. I've heard that. The book. Yeah, I expect the book is probably better.
If you
than
saw
the
documentary, I haven't seen. Did you see the movie?
No, I haven't. Just seen previews for it. Yeah. But
if you saw the movie Precious, which is a very dramatic, powerful movie, that's from a book. So written by Precious, I think. So you can, The Time Traveler's Wife, My Sister's Keeper, The Soloist. Wonderful way. This is one that I think Andy Anatko recommended. Gomorrah, a personal journey into the violent international empire of Naples' organized crime system. The thing is, when you listen to these books, they come alive for you. You listen to the reader. They're great readers. They pretty soon it disappears and you're just living the book. And it's so much fun. Audible.com/night. Give them a try. First book's free. No cost to you. No obligation. Let us know what you think. I have a feeling you're gonna love it. Audible.com/night. We thank them so much for their support for Ned at Night. Our last link of the evening, that I'm going to let Amber go back to her little boy.
All right, Leo. So for our last link, I call it the song of the week, but the song is not actually out yet. So
I can't play it.
The artist is MIA, and I'm a huge fan of hers. She's originally from Sri Lanka. You're probably familiar with her song, Paper Planes. Does that sound familiar? You would know it.
I'm an old fart. I don't know this stuff.
You would know that song. It's been in a bunch of movies and soundtracks. And trust me,
It's not Mia, it's MIA.
MIA. If you looked up Paper Planes on YouTube right now, I guarantee you have heard that song before. It's very, very catchy.
No, this is funny because this is one that all of our listeners can identify with.
It's very funny. So it turns out that she has a new song coming out on her new album, which should be out, I think, in the spring or the summer. And the song is entitled I'm Down Like Your Internet Connection. And it's based on a true story of her trying to deal with Verizon tech support to get
internet
set up home. Yep. And she decided to write a song about it. And as far as I understand from this post that was posted on switch.com, she actually got some of the tech support workers to sing on the phone, and she used it in her single. And so if you're familiar with MIA, she has a lot of sort of funky sounds in her music, and she has a lot of really creative stuff. So I cannot wait to hear the song. So hopefully we'll play it when it comes out, Leo. I'll keep my eye on this one.
I can't wait. Paper Planes was in Slumdog Millionaire. I do know that song.
Yes.
Now I know the song you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been in quite a few movies, actually, at least two or three.
And I know you have a connection to Sri Lanka because your parents have a home there. They help out there after the tsunami.
Yeah, they were there on and off for quite a while. Yeah. And I went there as well, probably about 10 or 12 years ago. So beautiful country. And so we'll play that song when it comes out, Leo. It will be our song of the week for real.
It's our virtual song of the week.
I know.
And by the way, as she says in the article, 10 phone calls later, I have internet that sticks and a song.
Yeah. Most of us don't get that creative with
it. Isn't it nice? Yeah, you can turn your troubles into a hit single.
I wish.
That's great. All right, Amber. Hey, we're out of time. What a great show, though. Some great information, and I think a great conversation about this paper tweet issue.
Oh, yes.
And
that will continue.
I don't know. I don't know what I would do. It's good that I couldn't do it, and it's good that it was only 2,000. It's easier for me to tune it down 2,000 than 10.
Less, yeah.
And what if they said 50? Then I'd do it. I'd have to do it.
Yeah.
So now we know what I am. We're just negotiating on the price. I'd have to do it.
It's good that you talk about it. Talk it through.
Amber, have a great evening. We'll
Thank
see you next week. You can watch us do this show live. We do it at 7 o'clock Eastern time every Tuesday. That's 4 p.m. Pacific on live.twit.tv. And, of course, you subscribe to the podcast by going to twit.tv/night, N-I-G-H-T. And you can subscribe on iTunes, Zune, Google, every podcast appliance known to man. twit.tv/N-I-G-H-T. Subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. Amber MacArthur is on CommandN.tv, a great video podcast at CommandN.tv. She's also on CP24 doing her Web Nation show and lots of other great stuff. Thank you, Amber. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on Net at Night.